What's going on, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 57. I'm your host, Jared, with my co-host, Paul.
What's up?
We're coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Happy New Year, everybody. It's our first show since December 18th. It's been a little bit of time.
Yeah, sure. Welcome back, everybody.
Yes, thanks, everybody on YouTube, everybody in WBUZ95, all of our other podcast outlets. Hope everybody had a cool holiday season. Happy fucking New Year.
Yeah, all that good shit.
Today's episode, man, it's going to be all about UFC 246, yep, Cowboy versus Conor. Before we dive into that, though, let's do our first of the year for our weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. Today we're smoking on a very rare strain at the moment. This is London Pound Cake, which is bred by Cookie Fam Genetics. This is a proprietary blend of theirs. You cannot even buy seeds of this right now, and no one knows the exact genetics except a sunset sherbet crossed with some kind of stuff. It's pretty damn tasty, though. This is it's a hybrid indica dominant, and that's all the info that's available for this.
There you go.
If you're lucky enough to be in California or somewhere like Nevada where you can find this strain, definitely pick it up, though. It's pretty tasty.
Hell yeah.
You know, all these reviews are talking about berry aromas and citrus, this and that. I don't really taste all that, but it does taste very delicious.
Yeah, it's got good taste
too. And it seems to be hella stony.
Yeah, for sure.
And the buds are beautiful, man. Very, very big, fluffy buds. Like, I like weed that fluffs up, yet it's still dense, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've literally gotten two different nugs. One was fucking 5 grams, the other one was 6.5.
Yeah, you're getting them big fat nugs, exactly. Yeah. Nice, thick, delicious herb. That's what I'm talking about, man. Fucking London Pound Cake. That sounded like terrible, didn't it?
That was awesome.
That's fucking thick and delicious weed. Mm. That's what I miss from Colorado, man. I used to get them fucking big colas out there. I don't know. I suppose you can. There's some dispensaries out here that sell cola buds, like by the ounce. But that shit's so crazy expensive. I'm not paying fucking $400 for some cola ounce. No. It's not going to happen.
Dude, I was watching this Vice show. It had this this guy who said he pays $600 for premium weed ounces in New York.
That's crazy.
Yeah, right?
That's even more expensive than the most expensive dispensary prices here in Nevada, which is one of the more expensive places you can buy fucking weed right now.
Yeah. It said $600.
Damn.
I was like, what the fuck?
Crazy. Can you believe out there? It's still illegal out there, too. That's why. All these places, we get so used to it. Like, I moved from Colorado, legal weed, to here, legal weed.
Yeah.
So, even though we didn't have legal weed when I first moved here, but whatever, we had medical. Did you do anything big for the new year, man, here in Las Vegas?
Nope.
I didn't either, man. I didn't do shit for New Year's. I don't. Everybody thinks living in Vegas, you go out and party on New Year's. I don't.
It's actually the opposite.
Like, I don't think most of the locals really do that. Yeah. It's like it's a big deal here. A lot of fucking fireworks, man.
Fuck yeah, it was crazy. I was down there, but it was because I was working, not because I was actually celebrating. It was terrible. I got there at 4 and I couldn't get off the strip until like 3 or 4 a.m. because they had the Las Vegas Boulevard closed off. And I was on the opposite side. So you couldn't cut through.
Yeah, for sure.
Awful. Awful.
Dude, they do way more fireworks for New Year's than anything else here. Way more than 4th of July.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, like, right when you thought it was over, they did, like, another 5 minutes of fireworks after that. Like, it always, like, dies down midway, and it's like, ha, it's like, yeah, it's crazy.
Hell yeah. But, no, I stayed home and chilled. I don't like drinking on New Year's Eve, man. I like to start the New Year off with some weed.
Yeah.
And then feeling good, not hungover.
I feel you. I'm not much of a drinker either. I can smoke all day, but I'm not. I'm a lightweight when I drink.
Yeah, me too, just because I don't anymore. Yeah, I used to party like a dumbass with alcohol, but whatever, everybody does at some point, right?
Yeah.
From most everybody.
Yeah.
Ooh, man, we're hitting these dabs before the show, too, man.
Yeah.
some tangerine fucking shatter. Mm. That was pretty juicy.
Yeah.
That got me pretty baked. This weed is nice. This bowl's topped off with some keef, too.
Yep.
Hope y'all listening are smoking on some fine herb right now, too. Dude, let's dive into the UFC, though, man. This, virtually this whole show is going to be about the return of Conor McGregor right here in Las Vegas, right down the street from us. Just a couple days from this show being on WBUZ 95, 2 days after we air here, we're gonna see what's up. What's up for real? We're hearing a lot of noise about how Conor's looking great. A lot of people overlooking Cowboy.
Yeah.
Is Cowboy going to kick his ass? You think there'll be an upset, Paul?
No.
I think Cowboy might come out and just smoke him, just lay him out.
No way.
Leave Conor in the dust. No. Drop him. Rattle him like Khabib did. No. Conor fall down and Donald will sink in and do a classic submission.
No.
Just some vintage Cowboy. Uh-uh. Everybody will be like, oh, and then Conor will come back and demand a rematch. No, I don't think so either.
I don't think any of that's happening. Why would you even say that?
I'm just playing a little devil's advocate here. No, you know, it could happen.
I get it.
Cowboy could come out and win. He's a good fighter, man.
But I feel like if he's going to win, it's going to be like deep into the rounds or by decision rather than...
So this interview came out, John Kavanaugh with the Mac Life, just a few days ago. And part of it, Kavanaugh said that basically Conor McGregor knows more about fighting than he, Kavanaugh, knows, and everybody else on the team put together, and that Conor was basically in charge of the training camp, and there's people now that are spinning that into a pretty big red flag, that this means that Conor's going to be underprepped, not doing shit, and going to wind up getting his ass kicked again. That's where that narrative is kind of spinning from, if you're of that camp.
I don't know. Like, we were watching the recent Ariel Helwani interview.
Yeah, the big ESPN interview.
It was literally released right before we started the show here. And I saw a different guy than what they're saying, you know?
A different guy in Conor?
Yeah, he looks ready to go. He looks a lot. He looks focused. He looks like he's the guy he was before.
He looks pretty solid, too. Like, he's noticeably larger than he typically is at this time before a fight. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, he's fighting at 170, and he said he was already on weight.
So. Yeah, he said he weighs 170 just in life in general. He claims to be under that at the time of that interview. I think he's throwing shade right there. I don't think he's weighing a 160. I think that's bullshit. But
then he did say that he could easily make 55 for this fight if he had to.
I'm glad he's not.
Yeah.
I think what he weighs on fight day will tell us a lot. If he comes in at 168, 169 again, then he's not really serious about long-term welterweight. If he comes in at like 170, I think that says, I know it's just a couple pound difference, but that couple pounds says a lot.
Not necessarily.
To me.
What if he can't, if he comes in at 165, shows that he's still Donald size and he's just a little bit faster.
Ooh. Your monster fucking puff.
If he were to come in at 65, I think that wouldn't be that big of a deal.
See, I think it would. Because he's going to be giving up some size then.
He's Cowboy's gonna definitely going to be 170, 171. He's gonna be giving up size either way on the in the height.
Well, I should be more specific. He's going to be giving up weight, like more considerable amount of weight.
Not necessarily.
Cowboy's never weighed under 170 for a welterweight bout.
Well, Cowboy's also in the same kind of place that where he said in multiple interviews, when he fights 170, he doesn't really cut any weight. He said that.
This is true.
He has said that. It's not like
He's a monster welterweight at all. Not, he's a little undersized at welter.
Yeah, he's kind of a lankier guy rather than he doesn't have the build. Kind of how Conor is. Conor could maybe fight up in this weight class if he was. If he was built like Tyron Woodley is, because Tyron Woodley is Conor McGregor's
size. Yeah, he's
size.
5'9".
He's
just
ginormous. He's got ginormous very hips, muscular, ginormous freaking shoulders. You know, he's a wide dude. Whereas if I, obviously I'm not saying Conor should do this, but if he were to fight at 170, he would possibly need to put on enough size to walk around at like 170.
He looks like he started that process. He's not. I'm not saying he's Tyron Woodley size. Don't misunderstand. No. But I'm saying that
he does look considerably bigger.
He's considerably bigger, and it's more muscular. It wasn't like before when he was training for 155 and wound up at 170 and was still the frame of a 155er. He looks bigger. Like Poirier is bigger now.
Here's the thing. The first time he fought 170, it was on 8 days' notice, and he started eating steaks and doing nothing. But if we're talking about the second time he fought 170, he actually was in considerably good shape, and his body tested went all five rounds. So,
right, but he's bigger now than he was then. It's muscular, muscle wise, he's putting on more muscle size.
I think he's just naturally a bigger guy now than he was when he was fighting.
He's got that going for him too. He's 31 years old now.
And people say, you know, I don't know, being a father and doing the stuff that he's done since he's, you know, stepped away from all the legal stuff that has gone over the last, I don't know, 18 months or whatever. It's like, it seems like he's
seemed very zen. Let's talk about the Ariel interview.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned it right there. Finally, Ariel's been catching some shit from other journalists for not asking about these sexual assault allegations.
And he asked him
directly, basically twice.
Actually,
yeah.
Like three times. He asked him about three different things, though. Altogether.
Like, he threw the real simple one. He's like, is there anything that you want to talk about? Like, you know.
He goes, do you have anything else pending in your life moving forward?
Immediately after talking about the child that he was not the father of. Like, they brought that up, that he was proven not the father of a child, that he's been fighting that in court for 2 fucking years, and it comes out, no, that's not my baby.
Yeah.
And then after that, he said, is there anything else that you wanted to discuss, that your allegations you have pending? And he was like, no. Right?
Yeah.
And then he followed it up a few minutes later with...
Yeah, and then he was like, well, there's sexual assault allegations the New York Times has brought up, and what do you have to say about those? And he was like, no.
He vehemently denied it.
And then he goes, fuck no.
Yeah, he was like, come on, Ariel, you don't have to fucking ask me.
Yeah.
But like, and he just basically summed it up as wanting time. He's like, just time will prove it. He's like, time I'm learning patience. Yeah. Just time will show this, just like the other one. Mm-hmm. And, I was pretty satisfied with that answer, because I kind of think it's bullshit we're talking about this anyways.
Yeah.
Just because of the reason it's covered under Irish law, and by Irish law they don't release the names of these people, and you're not supposed to be yapping about
it. Well, it's also been a year, though.
Like, it's been a fucking year.
It's been a year, so what are we talking about? If this was a case that was moving forward, there would be...
And there's zero. We know zero about it. There's zero facts out there to speculate about.
The only facts we know about it, that he was questioned and then released.
Yeah, that's it. And that's just what's asserted by the New York Times. There's no backup information for that.
Yeah, and that doesn't explain. And that doesn't explain if he was possibly one of a list of suspects that they were investigating, and he was questioned, released, and nothing stuck, and they've moved on. Like, they're not going to release that either way. You know what I'm saying? So even if, like Connor was saying, give me time. We'll all see in time. That doesn't even necessarily mean that he has something going on with himself. It could also mean that there's possibly other suspects that are in the middle of, you know, being questioned and things going on with that same case that he can't even, like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? He's not, could be not even a part
of it. We don't know what's going on. You know? We should... In speculation, as it being outside of the situation, is how I feel.
Like, there would be some information out there, or some kind of further, or some reason why he wouldn't even be able to leave Ireland if he was.
It's been a year.
Yeah, dude. Like, if there was, like, that was another way kind of Ariel questioned it too. He was like, was there anything that was stopped you from leaving the country and getting here?
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like there would be if he was a serious, like. A serious suspect in a rape case, like, come on.
I don't know, when it comes to this type of thing, we can only look at the facts that are available, and there's nothing really to even speculate on. There's no facts available. Other than he was questioned and released a year ago, and then possibly there was a second allegation, but we don't know shit about that, if that's even legit or not.
Yeah.
And so, and then he says, nope, nothing, give me time, you'll see it was all bullshit, and then that's that. Like, what else can you say?
Exactly how it happened when people were talking about when someone was claiming they were, that he had their kid.
Exactly. So we can only do that. And there's been some people that want to turn that into something more, and I just don't think you really legitimately can. Well, that's just
the society we live in.
You just want to be angry about something. Yeah. There's nothing, we don't know any facts. What the fuck can you be angry about? There's nothing to speculate. If you think he's guilty, you have nothing to base it on. If you think he's innocent, you can base it on the fact that he ain't been arrested. He was questioned a year ago and released, and there's been nothing else, and he's free to leave the country and keep making money, and that says something.
It
doesn't say he's innocent, but it certainly says he's not some major fucking suspect with a case about the clothes on his head.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And if he's proven guilty of something, well, by all means, he'll deserve everything that's fucking thrown at his ass. Yeah, but until then, you can't fucking make accusations and act like they're true. Especially in another country that releases zero information, not like here in America where we'd have all the fucking deets.
Yeah. Exactly.
I just said deets. I don't even know where that came from. Like, I don't fucking use that word. That's hilarious. It's this weed. It's this fucking London pound cake. It's pounded the word deets into my vocabulary.
Yeah.
All right. So that's enough about the Connor bullshit as far as that goes. But circling back to his training a little bit that he also brought up in the aerial interview that I thought was pretty interesting was his old boxing team from the Crumlin Boxing Club. He is
a part of his team.
A part of his team, a part of his camp, part of his corner.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's cool. It kind of scares me, though, because he also alluded to that he was going to fight a boxing fight in the near future, either Floyd or Manny Pacquiao for his title, which I don't know how you could really justify that if you're any boxing organization, but go for it.
Oh, that would be illegitimate as fuck, but... As a Conor fan, admittedly, I'd be like, yep, do it, please.
Yep.
I don't know if he could fucking win, but
I don't know if he could beat Manny. Again. Probably not. But.
Probably not. I mean, come on. Can he shoot his sights Manny, a little lower? There's some chump champs he can pick off.
Manny got beat by a school teacher, dude.
I bet Conor could beat Jeff Horn.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Jeff Horn beat Manny, so...
Any fucking given fight, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Which is why I was mentioning earlier, Cowboy does have a chance here. We're not trying to shit all over Cowboy. Yeah, fucking love Cowboy.
Dude, Cowboy's a great fighter, but he's just kind of in the twilight of his career. He's coming off two losses. His chin's not the same after his last two losses. He was wobbled heavily, and his last fight he was knocked out cold. So I mean, or was it cold? No, actually, no. Gaethje pulled back. He could have been hurt bad, but Gaethje dropped him, and he was like, "No, it's my friend, dude. Like, I'm not gonna kill you." But
dude, I like everything about Justin Gaethje except his manager. I wish he had a different team.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Connor, I think, was alluding to that a little bit, too, when he was saying Gaethje was talking shit and being about the rape shit.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's getting that from Ali.
Yeah, for sure.
Who is, if you don't know, folks, this also could be Nurmagomedov's manager, amongst a host of other crazy things, but we won't dive into that.
I wonder if that brings up any friction between the two if Justin were to get the fight.
I don't know. Who do you make of Khabib's 10 fights? I just thought that was just talk. He's like, Connor would have to win 10 fights in a row to fight him again. I just wrote that
That's
off.
That's not up to him.
Silly shit talking. It's clearly not in his control.
Yeah, like, like,
I mean,
if the money's there, they're going
to
do it.
I still don't want to see it. I don't want them to fight again. I'd rather see some other things.
Such as?
Well, such as the reason I think this whole fight is happening, which is...
George Masvidal?
Who's also, let's be honest, not the biggest welterweight, who was in fact a lightweight up until recently, fairly recently.
Nah, he's been a welterweight for about 4 years now.
Yeah, fairly recently is a bit of a stretch. But, I mean, he fought at 155 for quite a while, and then later in his career he's moved up to 170. Point being, it's not like he was a 185-er cutting down to 170 like Darren Till.
Yeah.
Or not Darren Till, but other examples.
Yeah, but he's definitely filled out. Like, George was a little bit on the skinnier
George
side.
George is up to size.
But he's definitely filled out.
Absolutely.
I would love to see him and Connor go at it. If Connor is who we all want him to be, you know what I'm saying? Or just for the sport's sake, like, when Connor McGregor's good, it's more electric because then the bigger fights happen and then all the other people fall in line and follow, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Because then. When one guy's making the most money, everybody's making more money. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of strange to me because if you look down this card, there's really not many other huge fights, you know?
No, they're diverting that salary to the top two. Dude, yeah. Even Cowboy, both these guys are getting gigantic paydays. The disclosed payday.
Connor was talking about he's possibly making 80 mil here.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What people don't realize is he's making ad revenue also because he's got Proper 12 a part of his UFC contract.
Exactly.
So he's not only getting paid to freaking fight, he's getting paid for advertising too.
And he specifically brought up pay-per-view cuts from other countries.
Yeah.
So Australia, Great Britain, Ireland. And Ireland, and something else.
Well, I was looking at...
Which they're not governed by the ESPN deal.
Yeah, so. Well... I was watching, because I follow BT Sport on Twitter, and they were showing Conor highlights, and it said that the pay-per-view was $25. So that's kind of strange, because they don't pay for pay-per-views over there normally.
That's probably why it's such a low price, but I bet you Conor gets a huge hunk of that.
Oh, for sure. $25 is probably not that big a deal.
He's probably getting $10 on a fucking pay-per-view out of that shit. Yeah, I wouldn't even be surprised one bit.
That kind of solves the problem too of all the people over in Ireland that can't afford to get over here.
But even his disclosed payday is a flat fee of $5 million, which is a UFC first by
that's just
like $3 million. Yeah. I don't know.
I think Brock's got the most.
Brock got two. Yeah.
And then Conor got three. Well, no, Connor said
he got three flat fee for
Habib. Habib, but he said he made 50.
Yeah, Jesus. And his numbers on that Forbes was
that was his first
up.
Fight with all the with all the ad revenue and stuff he was getting from Proper 12. Also,
mm-hmm.
Man, that fight was so toxic.
Dude, Cowboy's getting a flat fee, $2 million.
Yeah,
well, Connor talks a lot of shit, but that Red Panty Night is real.
Don't forget also. He's doing a lot of things with Budweiser right now. There's going to be a special can that's only sold on that day with the Cowboy like logo on it or something like that. And then you see his freaking mouthpiece that he got made. It's fucking Cowboy fucking kicking the Lucky Charms guy in the stomach, and Lucky Charms are spilling out. That's for the fight. Like he's getting like
excellent.
He's getting his fair share here as well.
Dude, that's one thing Connor really does. He uses it as shit talk, but he does change a fighter's life when he fights
sometimes,
him like that.
Yeah.
Especially like, look at Nate's career.
A well-established guy like Nate or Donald.
Yes.
Or, like, you know what I'm saying?
The biggest thing could happen to him.
They're
man.
Already not exactly household names, but they're good enough. You know what I'm saying? They're good enough to where you can build a fan base around them because it's like a feel-good story. It's like Cowboy's a hard-working guy. He fights fucking six times a year,
mm-hmm.
and he just gives no shits. He just
holds
parties
all those
and
records.
Then he fights.
Yeah.
You know, and then so yeah, I just feel like with a guy like that, it's easy to build the story and it's easier to, like, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but Connor's only doing the press day and then the interview. Or not the interview, but the press conference on
press conference, and then
Wednesday.
He's doing media day, which he hasn't done in like since the Aldo fight.
But other than that, this is a kind of a less advertised fight.
He hasn't hardly, and he's not talking any shit. He's been nothing but nice about Cowboy. He's nice towards him in the aerial interview.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though: they haven't been face to face yet. That's when we'll hear some of the shit talk.
That's
There's going to be
some press
conference shit
talk. Will have aired after we record this episode. So
there's
going to
be a little bit of shit talk, I think. Not like disrespect, like, I fucking hate you, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like these had with Eddie and Poirier and people like that, where he dropped some fucking great one-liners that will go down in his story forever. You know?
Right.
But I think there will be the, I'm going to go out there and dust him in the first round, and Cowboy's going to be like, no, you're not. He's like, oh, yeah, blah, 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 blah. And then the shit talk will come. It'll be playful shit talk rather than...
Yeah, than serious.
Yeah. Right. Kind of how, like, George and Nate are. Like, where he's like George's like, I'm just going to go and baptize him. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, that's shit talk for sure, but it's playful. It's not...
It got really mean
playful,
with
though.
Khabib, man. That
yeah,
shit got
dude,
really
got dark. Got
dark
as fuck.
Nobody liked that. Nobody wants that here.
No.
Connor's smart enough to realize that.
I have a question for you that I was... So I was listening to Brett Okamoto's year-end in review with him, Arahwani, and Mark Raimondi, and they were talking about what was their biggest disappointment over the last decade. And Brett Okamoto said the Conor versus Floyd fight because he feels like where Conor was when he beat Eddie Alvarez, that he feels like he had the possibility to contend to be one of the greatest of all time had he just continued to fight in the UFC at the level he was at. What do you think about that?
Let me hit this pipe here while my thoughts formulate this London pound cake here. I think that that point has a valid argument. But I also think that there's never going to be an opportunity equal to what Conor had when that fight was offered to him, and it would have been absolutely idiotic not to pursue it and take it when you look at the amount of cash and spring that gave him, even in a valiant losing effort. Like, he made more money than Brett Okamoto, Ariel Helwani, me, you, and half this fucking audience is ever going to make doing it. So how could you say that, I mean, I can see where he is a disappointment as a fan.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's impossible for me to begrudge what he earned. Look at what it did for him.
Oh, yeah, no. And
it's not like he went out and got embarrassed.
For the money part.
Like, he didn't even get embarrassed. He didn't even get embarrassed, dude. Yeah, he did well.
He did.
You can't even be like, oh, he went out and got slept in the first round, fool. Yeah. Like, no, nah, actually.
Got rope-a-doped.
He got rope-a-doped a bit. Right when his endurance was gone, Floyd turned it on.
And then got kind of an iffy stoppage.
He got pretty robbed on the standing eight count, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. It's not the big
Look deal. At all the fucking loot. We don't even know the extent of the loot and the trajectory. Like, how much of his whiskey is attributed to that fucking boost from Floyd when it comes
Supposedly,
to
Supposedly, Conor was saying that he's going to be a billionaire by 35.
I wouldn't even put it past him, so I can't. I get what Okamoto's saying, and that's probably pretty valid, but if it was some other stupid thing that didn't have all of the benefits attached to it that came with that Floyd fight, I'd be like, yeah, dude, dumb move. But
I think it just sucks as a fan more than, like, I agree with your point as far as the money side. I think he's just speaking as, like, a fan.
I feel it, because I don't think Conor's going to be the same, ever been the same. I didn't think he was going to come back. I've said on the show a million times, that was it. You don't make $100 million and come back the same badass you were before. Sorry, that's life.
Yeah.
I think
that's why I feel like this fight is so pivotal for him. You know, it's so
huge, man.
It's live or die, you know?
And not only does he has to win spectacular. He has to go out and look like he did against Alvarez to recapture the fucking magic. He's got to go out and just smoke Cowboy, make him look a fool, dust him.
Or just go and dust him.
Like,
which could very well happen. I'm still not 100%
on board that's going to happen. Like, Conor's swinging me, dude. He said all the right things, except I don't know about that training thing. I'm a little iffy about that.
About
one.
The what?
The training thing. About how he's running his own camp or whatever, basically. That could just be talk from Kavanaugh, too.
How much is that the actual training rather than is it the strength and conditioning with the whole McGregor fast and all that stuff? Is that
these are just words. We don't even know. You know. It's not like we're seeing footage where Conor's in there like, this is what we're doing today, everybody.
Well,
like,
and to be honest,
it's just words.
Why is it such a big deal, though? Because what really is structured can any of those guys give him that he can't give himself? Also, it's like he knows what to do. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he's, and I'm sure they wouldn't sit there and tell him, oh, good job, do this, if he was doing something wrong. I'm sure they would be able to, being in his camp this long, they'd be able to step back and say, hey, let's do this today instead. You know, by full control, I think they just mean like when, as far as like the structure and time and what they're going to do, you know what I'm saying? Rather than it being like, oh, we're going to do whatever the fuck I feel like today.
That's the way I read it too.
You know, I feel like it's like they all sat down together and laid out a blueprint, but they all did it collectively rather than like John just doing it or Roddy doing it or Conor doing it. It's more of like Conor took the lead, but we all laid it out. You know what I'm saying? I feel like that's always been that way for that camp. I don't think there's ever really been a time where Conor hasn't been kind of the one that everyone follows. You know,
we're going to get footage. Just watch. Conor wins. Let's say Conor comes out, wins spectacularly, moves on. You don't think they're filming shit Connor has his own media company. He's already released a documentary with the fucking Floyd one. Of course they're filming stuff. Anything dope happens, they're going to fucking put out all kinds of all kinds of stuff for the public. Well, before we make our final picks, how does Cowboy win? How does Cowboy win his fight? Is it with his wrestling? Does it come out? Does he take Connor down?
No, I actually fucking think shoot it's with him? Kicks. I think it's kicks. I think if he can keep Connor at a distance, because here's the thing. Cowboy's really good with his switch kick and really good with that push kick to the body. If you can keep Connor from closing that distance with that push kick to the body and then go up high, maybe he can stun him or do something. I mean, Connor's got a pretty good chin historically throughout his career. He's been rocked a few times, but he's never, even when he's rocked, he's recovered every time. He fucking took, he got literally dropped by Khabib and then strikes rained down on him for fucking 3.5 minutes.
And he was being super sloppy, and that's usually when a fighter gets like slept for reals, when you're being sloppy and dumb, and Connor's being sloppy and dumb right there.
So I think if Cowboy's going to do it, it's going to be kind of like how he did with Isla Quinta. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe he'll start slow, but if he's able to pick it up in the third, fourth, and fifth, like he's, that's kind of Cowboy's style. You know, he kind of comes out in the first, feels you out.
That's what he tends to do.
Unfortunately, that's what's got him stopped in a lot of these championship bouts, because all the guys you fight are killers. They're going to go out and do the fucking him job
for the, for the 155
Pettis
title.
Did the same thing, didn't he?
RDA just was all over him. And I'm sorry, Connor's more vicious than RDA.
Cowboy's got some iffy performances in high-level bouts.
It's undeniable. It's his history. Yeah. He has a lot of good, a lot of records. He's a great fighter, but he's also, there's a reason he didn't win the WEC or the UFC title fight.
He also has fights like the Masvidal fight, where he came out and Masvidal just slept him. And that was like, Masvidal's a legit guy, but, you know, he looked terrible in that fight. Terrible. He has fights like that. Or Poirier, where he just looked terrible. Or not Poirier, I'm talking Gaethje.
Gaethje.
Yeah. Same thing, honestly, when he fought Ferguson, he looked flat too.
So you don't think like that Ferguson, his best bet is to go to the ground?
Here's the thing is, like, I feel like as Cowboy's gotten older, he's gotten, I don't want to say less sharp, but he's gotten more big shots rather than where he used to be just like a constant onslaught. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
Like that when he fought Aya Quinta, I felt like he won the fight because he stayed on the outside and hit him with the big kicks and the big punches. Like he went for combos and sat back. Like whereas I feel like earlier in his career he'd kind of walk people down and, you know, it would be like a barrage of strikes and kicks and punches and elbows and everything like that, whereas now he kind of sits back and then explodes and then sits back, explodes. And I think some of it has to do with him leaving Jackson's kind of being on his own as well. People aren't taking that into fact. You know, like you can say that shit about Connor's camp, but Cowboy's literally in the same boat. He's in a situation where he's his own head coach and he brings people into the BMF ranch and they get a camp together and then he deals with it fight by fight basis.
Yeah, I was watching his some of his videos. I don't even know who these people are. Like his conditioning coach, I'm like, ooh. It was a woman I've never heard of. I know he's had that wrestling coach for a while. I can't remember his name, but he's been a part of the team, but I don't know if he's been like the head coach. Now he's the main guy. Like, I don't know what he's doing either, but
yeah.
Cowboy, I don't know. I think the opposite when it comes to his chances of victory. I think he needs to go in and take Connor down and see if Dylan Danis is full of shit when he says Connor's jiu-jitsu is really good.
It's anywhere near that.
Trip him, take him down.
I don't think it's that easy, though. I don't think it's that easy. Everyone seems to think that Connor just gets taken down.
Like, well, he should
find
out.
It's not what happens. It's literally.
Oh, I agree. I'm not saying that's what
throughout
happens.
His career. He doesn't get taken down very easily. The only person who took him down easily was Chad Mendez. Even look at Khabib. Khabib had a hell of a time taking him down. Every single time he took him down in that fight. You cannot deny that.
I think he'd be better suited to that than striking with Connor. I think Connor would all strike the fuck out of
Because think about it this way. That was Eddie Alvarez's game plan. He came out and he tried to wrestle Connor out the gate, tried to close the distance with his wrestling, and Connor picked him off on his way in every single time. And then once he realized he couldn't get in with the grappling, then he went to plan B a minute into the fight. And I feel like that's a very similar situation Cowboy can get himself into if he were to try to go in there and grapple with him. Because one thing Connor does is he makes small distances and he just covers them so quick. Like,
absolutely.
Like when you're talking like a grappling exchange where I think if Cowboy's going to take him down, his best chance is to maybe throw him on the feet. And if you're trying to close that distance, Connor closes that distance with the elbow, closes that distance with the big left hand. He's on fucking Queer Street 30 seconds into the fight.
There's a difference between, I'm not saying he should run in 30 seconds into the fight and start shooting for takedowns, but I think his ultimate path to victory would be with takedowns. Trying to do level changes and get Connor down. I'm not saying he can do it, dude. I don't think Cowboy wins this fight at all. I think Connor's going to smoke him. I'm just saying in an ideal, like his ideally,
historically, I feel like that's kind of like
that would be what he should.
I feel like it's something that people have always kind of like thrown at Connor, like, oh, you don't have wrestling, but he has wrestling defense. He just doesn't have very much wrestling offense. When actually he does, kind of. He took Holloway.
We don't
down.
Even know.
He took people.
That was
down.
Years ago. Yeah. Years ago.
He's got a submission victory in Cage Warriors.
And that was years ago. Like I'm saying, Connor could have improved leaps and bounds. We don't know. People talk shit.
We're talking
with him and Danis.
By the time he steps in the octagon, probably.
Danis came in when he was fighting Aldo.
Yeah.
Aldo, a fucking grip ago. And he's still rolling with
him. The question
is, years later,
how involved is Danis anymore, though? Because he lives in New York now and only does his training camp. But Danis fights on the 25th. He's fighting on the 25th.
I know he owns part of Bellator.
That's one thing.
You heard that shit, right? Brother's like, I own shit. That's why I fight catch weight.
No, dude, I'm a part owner. Did you hear that? They're thinking about opening a 175 and 165 division in Bellator. So maybe that's why they're moving him to 175 every fight, because that's eventually going to be a weight class.
Then he's
going to
be like, I created this shit.
I'm
killing Danis, bitch.
I guarantee you that's what he's going
to
do.
But yeah, I'm just saying. I think Connor's jiu-jitsu is probably way better than anybody thinks. But if I was Cowboy's team, I would be trying to – I'd be striking with him to start. You're going to feel him out. But then try to get in, land a few blows, go for a level change, get him
it's
down.
It's going
to
be a good fight.
See what happens on the ground. But I don't think he stands
though.
A prayer.
I think the first 55 seconds of the fight are dangerous for Cowboy.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. I think personally it's going to end within the first – I think it likely ends in the first round, honestly. Two at the most, but I'm not going to be surprised at all to see this go similar to the RDA fight. All
right, here goes the big question of the day, though.
What happens
if Connor loses?
Well, then there's been a lot of questions before this fight about is Connor's star diminished, et cetera. Those questions will be answered with a yes after that. Yes, he'll still be a star. He'll still have shit. He'll probably still have good fights, but nobody's going to be talking about titles and Khabib fights and BMF fucking shit. He's got the Nate fight.
I was going to say, I think that sets up the Nate fight perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, that's about what's left is the Nate fight.
And if he wins the Nate fight, I feel like he's right back in the mix.
If he wins the Nate fight, he'd be back in the mix. But he could, I mean, he'd be on a 2-3 fight if you count the Floyd fight. A 3-fight losing streak with his last win coming against Eddie Alvarez in 2016. That'd be terrible.
Be rough.
Terrible. Like, his brand will hurt immensely.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it's pretty much the worst thing that could happen, way worse than it could be, boss.
Yeah.
Would be losing this, especially after we just saw Gaethje smoke him. We've seen George smoke him. We've seen Poirier fucking beat him. Dude.
When did Poirier fight him?
Poirier fought Cowboy, didn't he?
I don't think so.
Am I tripping?
I think so.
No, I could be. It could be this London pound cake pound in my brain. But either way, you get my drift, though.
Yeah,
you get
sure,
the point.
100%, yeah.
Like, Connor can't lose this fight.
No.
He better hope he doesn't barely win. If it goes like the second Nate fight where he just, like, he wins, but it's like, damn, that'll be terrible for him, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he could spin it off. It won't be devastating, but it won't.
Ring rust, I guess.
Yeah.
It
won't be good.
Like ring rust.
It'll be like, well, we'll see what happens after the ring rust. Excuse.
Well, one thing that Dana White said about the whole situation with Connor and 170 pounds is he said that he wants to fight George, but also don't be surprised if you see George, Masvidal, and Nate Diaz fight again in 2020. So is it that Dana wants to see that Conor and Khabib fight after this one, or is it that George Masvidal wants to fight Nate again before he fights anyone else? Or is George Masvidal going to fight for the title before he fights Conor or Nate?
That's a lot of ifs in there.
You know what I mean? That's really what we got.
Being as George is here in town in Vegas, here with us.
He's going to be front row.
And he's going to be front row for this fight. And if it goes as we all want it to, it being as Conor fans, like you and me, we're fans. I want Conor to go out and put on a spectacular performance.
For sure.
I love Cowboy, but this, sorry, buddy.
Yeah, this is not.
Like, we're on two different trajectories here. I want to get back on the Conor train. I want it to be fun. I want to be talking crazy shit. I want to see, like, three titles in three divisions, fucking all kinds of dope shit going on. Yeah, like, it was fun, man. It's great for the game.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm happy to hop back on that train. That's what I really hope happens.
That's why I feel like if George fights Kamaru first and beats Kamaru, I feel like it makes the Conor fight so much bigger.
Oh, it does. But what if he's not necessarily going to beat Kamaru Usman. I said, maybe. That's not a walk in the park.
Never said it was, but George Masvidal is on a beat path to the fucking title at this point.
That'd be putting a hell of a lot of string. I mean, he's capable of it, but then to come back and beat Conor too, I don't know. I think you'd want to take the Conor payday while it's hot. What if Conor loses to somebody else in the meantime?
Or what if Conor holds out?
He's probably looking at that $2 million Cowboy just got. That's way more than fucking. That's like at least a 4x. What'd he get? A $500,000 for that fucking BMF?
700. Each one of them got 700.
I mean, that's a big fat payday, and that was headlining. That was the biggest one of his career.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's a fraction of Conor's disclosed.
The question becomes, will it be for the BMF title, though?
Yes, despite all Dana's bullshit, 100%. There's no way they let it.
And will The Rock be there?
I mean, Conor and George. Dana can say what he wants. George is going to bring that belt with him, and Conor's going to be like, that's my motherfucking belt. And then if Conor wins, he's going to demand it in the octagon. Give me my fucking bad motherfucker belt.
Yeah.
You know he will.
Yeah, for sure.
But I don't know if he beats George, but that's which a whole starts, other story.
Which sparks another after-fight brawl where they fight for the BMF title again.
Because imagine if he beats George and then he fights Nate for the BMF title. Like, imagine if the third what? Conor fight
dude,
would be
no,
for the BMF
just,
title.
Exactly. That would be perfect, dude.
That'd be sick. That'd
be perfect. Conor just carries the BMF everywhere, dude. I guarantee you, he would never fight for another weight. I bet you would never fight another lightweight or welterweight, like, actual title fight again if he won a BMF.
No, that'd be his third title, and
that
would
be
his favorite.
This is the McGregor belt I was telling you motherfuckers about. That's what he would say, dude.
He'd say that BMF for like baddest McGregor fucker.
Stupid. No, but yeah, it would have to be, man. It would have to be for that belt.
See, I want that ride. I like that shit as a fan, dude. That's awesome shit right there.
Yeah, for sure.
So, fuck the haters. That's what I want to see happen. Just for my own personal enjoyment. I don't give a fuck about Conor's enrichment. I'm selfish. I'm talking about personal enjoyment here.
Well, the question then becomes, what's more valuable, the BMF title or the real title?
Depends on who's holding it.
That's what I'm saying. Right now, what do you think is more valuable right now, the welterweight title or BMF?
Well, let's
title?
Just say Kamaru Usman received a flat fee, and so did Colby Covington, of $500,000 to fight for the real title.
And
Nate
George,
and Kamaru Usman got $700,000 to fight for the BMF title in the same weight division. Which one's more valuable?
I think Nate got $1 million.
Mm. I think Nate might have. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised.
Because Nate's got.
Nate had more negotiating power than that
because
he
of the
made
Conor
it.
Fight.
He made
when
the
he signed
BMF
that
title.
Deal. Because he signed that huge deal after the Conor fight.
Imagine him fighting for the BMF because Nate would be like, that's my title. I made it. And Conor's like, I hold it right here, bitch. That would be so dope.
And then you close Conor out in the year with Khabib in Moscow in December.
Ugh, I know. He was saying he wanted that fight too. I don't want that fight.
I'm down. I'm always down.
You think Khabib fights Gaethje in the meantime if he beats Ferguson? Do they give that to Gaethje? Gaethje's
no,
because
don't. Remember, he goes on Ramadan right after this fight with Ferg.
Oh, so this is it before his end of the year fight? Yeah. Oh, that's fucking lame.
Yeah. I think that's what they were saying. That,
I mean, whatever. I don't like
Khabib,
but I'm not going to knock him
for any
religion shit.
I don't know anything about, like,
that sucks.
How that correlates date-wise, I don't know when that is, so...
It's only a 30-day period, but there's a lot, as far as I know, preparation before and after. But I don't know shit, dude. I'm talking on my ass.
Yeah, I don't know anything about
that. I don't like Khabib. I'm not disrespecting what he does for his religion. Dude, do what you got to do. That just sucks if we got to wait till the end of the year. Yeah, it sucks
if you got to wait to
see him fight. In an ideal world, he'd fight Khabib. Or, I mean, he'd fight Gaethje and then finish out something with Conor.
Yeah.
Because I really want
to
see that.
Well, I don't know, because I wouldn't be so quick to count Tony Ferguson out. He could be leaving with the championship in March or April, whenever it is. April, right?
It's April.
He could very well be leaving.
Absolutely. God. So there's a lot of possibility on the horizon here with these fights. It's an exciting time.
I'd like to see Khabib move up to 170.
We're ultimately both picking Conor here, though, right?
Yeah.
Circling back to this fight, it's Conor.
For sure.
What round do you think? You think it goes long?
I'm taking Conor in the first minute and a half.
Damn, you're picking minutes.
Yeah, because I think he's just going to do what every other fighter's done to Cowboy in these big fights and go out and push the pace early. Cowboy kind of tends to shell up because he's kind of in the range building. Like, you know what I'm saying? He's kind of in the whole... I honestly hate to say this, but I think Cowboy's chin's diminished. I'm sorry, but I've seen him get wobbled more than I've seen him get wobbled in his entire career in the last six fights. 100%.
It's hard to deny
dating back to George. After George, like, he got rocked in the Robbie fight. Got rocked when he fought fucking Yancy Medeiros. It was like he won the fight eventually, obviously, against Medeiros, but it was like they both came out and just started swinging. He got kind of wobbled, then he wobbled Medeiros and put him away.
Yeah.
And then again in the Hernandez fight, although he won the fight, that was also another one of those wars where he stood in the pocket and was willing to take the big shots and kind of push forward. That's not good at his age to continue to do that. And then, of course, Ferguson fight, he got his face sliced up.
Eye. Yeah,
so it's like... And then, of course, he got knocked out by Gaethje. So it's like, how much damage has he really going to be able to take after the last six fights of his... that he's been in have all been kind of that same.
They've been pretty brutal. Thing. And I feel, I love Cowboy, but I hate seeing him get smoked like that. I can't disagree. I think it's going to be first round pretty quick. I think Conor might go out there for a minute and before he blitzes. But ultimately, yeah. Well, there's not much of a card built around this fight. I mean, everybody, this is the Conor McGregor and Cowboy Cerrone show, as it should be. But it's pretty weak. I mean, the co-main event, I like both of these ladies, but it's a weak fight.
Just a fight with no implications.
I don't even understand why they're doing it. I mean, they've already fought once before. I didn't think it was controversial, was it? Am I forgetting something? Was Holly Holm versus Raquel Pennington one? Am I forgetting?
Did Holm beat her?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I think they're just running out of people.
That's the way that this fight made me feel as well, too. Like, they was just like, these two are available.
Well, same thing. It's like they're just kind of running out of contenders. Someone make a performance happen, you know?
Yeah, for real. I mean, again, no disrespect. I like both of them as fighters. I just don't like this particular fight. I don't really see the point. Yeah, I'm gonna take Holm. I can't pick against Holly Holm in this fight. Raquel Pennington is good. She's solid. She's made vast improvements, but it's Holly fucking Holm.
Yeah. Holly Holm is... the second best of her generation.
For sure.
Maybe not of all time, but of her generation, for sure.
You were speaking in MMA, right?
Yeah,
for sure. I can't disagree with that at all. Another good fight, we were talking about Anthony Pettis a little while ago. He's fighting... Yeah.
Crazy story fighting? That he was
Fiera,
having...
Fiera, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Fiera. Douglas Carlos Fiera, something like that. Yeah. I can't remember how you say his name. My bad.
He's tough, though.
He's a tough out, though. I've seen him fight plenty of times.
Yeah. Pettis.
He's good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. Pettis told another weird story today, too, that he's in the process of suing USADA over him taking a pre-fight sample before the Diaz fight and where they gave him a bottle that he pissed in that must have had some kind of cut, like some broken in.
Yeah, because he has to screw the lid back on it himself. And so when he's screwing the lid, the jar sliced his finger up and like the webbing in between his fingers, apparently.
Uh-huh. And so, like, he couldn't warm up for the fight because they were trying to figure out a way to either stitch it or get it closed before the fight started. And then they got it glued, and then they tried to warm up, but it reopened, so they had to glue it again. So he couldn't warm up before the fight, and he said that's why he came out so slow.
And he said also when he was in the pre-fight check out there, when they checked his hand, the tape, that yeah. when the ref just, you know, extended his hand,
yeah,
boom, it ripped open. It right there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's suing.
He's suing USADA. So that's kind of interesting.
And he said it was his second test of that day, yeah, right before the fight.
Well, because he said after they did the weigh-in, he obviously drank a lot of water once he weighed in. They said that his sample was diluted, so they needed to take a second sample.
I'm just... He
literally had to wait to pee.
You saw it, man. I'm like, I'm over it at this point. I'm over it. I'm tired of it. It's always something with these guys. I don't believe in the picogram nonsense. And then now, I mean, you've got jars slicing fighters immediately before they go out and fight. I realize that's a freak accident, but I mean,
yeah, but that's still stupid. It's like, why? That's,
why? Why? He didn't even test hot. You can't even be like, oh, but look, we caught him. Yeah. You know, you didn't catch shit.
And you cut him before his biggest fight
he
of his life.
Could he not piss an hour and a half later after the fight? Like, you can't, like, for real.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think he was had in his system?
Yeah. I feel like. Come on. Yeah, come on.
But anyway, he's fighting. Who do you like in that fight against him at Fiera?
I think he's going to win. He's going to get back on track here.
Yeah, this is back down at 155. He's dropping back down to lightweight after a brief stint at welterweight.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best move as well.
Yeah.
On the prelims, headline and prelims, we got a fight. One of my favorite fighters, dude, Roxanne Modafari, Las Vegas local, pioneer in women's MMA. This girl was fighting in Japan for women's MMA before anybody knew shit, long before Ronda Rousey was fucking doing anything in MMA.
She was on two different seasons of The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah, she's been around a very long time, and she stuck with it. Like, she was teaching English lessons to Japanese students to get by while fighting in Japanese MMA promotions in Japan, just as a pioneer in women's MMA. This girl has been around a long time, and she's like the nicest person. Her nickname is the Happy Warrior. She's super fucking cool.
Which, you know what? You know what makes me think? Why the fuck did they put her up against Macy
Barber? No, it's so, I feel bad. Macy Barber's a killer.
Macy Barber's going to fucking murder her, unfortunately. Oh. Macy Barber's training with Ben Askren now. You know that?
Yeah, if you ever heard of Macy Barber, folks, she's definitely a name to keep out for. Yeah. She's a young up and comer in the division.
Some would say a possible future champion.
7-0, lots of vicious power, lots of vicious ground and pound. She's a beast. And I don't like the fight at all. It's super tough for Roxanne Modafari. I respect her wanting to get in there and mix it up with anybody.
To the contrary, you could also say if Roxanne were to pull off some kind of victory against Macy, it would just shoot her right back into the title picture.
It'd be spectacular.
But she has no business fighting Valentina.
No. I mean, I'm not... Dude, she's great, but everybody has a limit. And her skill sets have improved.
For sure.
You know, she started working out with the guys here in town.
I think, you know what it is?
Is it John Wood over there?
It's the actual physical restraints, I feel like, when it comes to Roxanne. She's a good fighter, but she doesn't do anything extremely exceptionally well. You know, she's not crazy fast. She's not crazy. She doesn't have a lot of power. She's got good jiu-jitsu, but not great jiu-jitsu. You know, she's good enough to carry her through any fight with any person in the world. You know, she's able to contend with anyone. But she doesn't have any overwhelming physical factors that would push her past someone like a Valentina or, in my opinion, someone like Macy Barber. Because Macy has so much speed and explosion with her punches. Whereas Roxanne has all the perfect technique with everything she does. She doesn't have a much pop to anything, you know?
Yeah, Macy Barber's not just any young fighter coming up. She's clearly something special.
She's a future champion, I feel like
she is, too. She's clearly something special here. It's not like just... Roxanne Modafari can't beat a random young fighter. No. This is someone special. And we're talking also about her. Unfortunately, her division's ruled by
special. Roxanne's also older now. You know, she's not in the prime of her career. It's really unfortunate that she's kind of one of the tweeners, kind of like Raquel Pennington and Holly Holm, whereas they came into the UFC as specialists. And then now that the UFC's evolved and the whole women's division has evolved so much in the last, I want to say, 2 to 3 years.
It really has.
That they're their abilities were once considered elite in a division that now they're considered the norm, you know?
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but they're still all pioneers of the women's
division. Right, she's a live fighter, and she can win.
Oh, 100%.
We could be talking next week about, holy shit, look at what Roxanne Modafari just pulled
off. She could pull off.
I mean, she just beat Shevchenko's sister. You know, everybody thought she wasn't going to do that. She 100%. Went out to fucking Moscow or wherever and won over there.
Yeah, it was crazy.
You know, and she was undefeated, too.
But then she dropped one to Jennifer Maia right after that. So it's like, that's kind of the theme with her career, unfortunately. She's got some good wins, but she's also got some bad losses.
So I hope she does all right. I'd love to be talking about a win, but I'm not seeing it.
Then we got a really good fight. I think this is the main event of the
early prelims. Early
prelims.
Because we have the early prelims, the prelims, and then the.
But this is a really, really good fight. We got Andre Feely taking on Sadiq Youssef.
And that's at
145. I think so. Yeah. Sadiq is a fucking hammer. Like, this is going to be a tough fight for Feely.
Very tough fight for Feely.
But on the other side, though, Feely's a real game opponent. When it comes, he's got the Team Alpha Male guys behind him.
He's got that new Uriah Faber tattoo. He's going to get the Faber power, maybe. Yep. It's a bold move to get a tattoo of a dude you like hang out with.
Fucked up,
bold
man.
Move indeed.
It's his coach, though. Like, it's different, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty.
It's
weird.
Not even like somebody you would just admire that you would never bump into. Even like that's a dude you see on the regular. Like, what's up? I see you when I wake up.
He's also tatted head to toe, so I don't really think he's.
Dude, I'm not knocking
it.
Do you? I'm just saying it's a bold move
for sure.
Maybe we'll get a shot at some point of like Faber standing next to Feely with the tattoo right there too.
It's on his foot.
Like, so something from the corner, like where you could see like where Feely's up high and Faber's down low, and it'd be beautiful. It'd be beautiful.
Oh god.
But that's a great fight though.
Yeah, I think unfortunately though, I think Youssef is going to beat the brakes off him.
Yeah, I think it could easily go that way.
Yeah. Yusuf's a really another one of these guys from the Contender Series who's come in and really made a pretty big splash in the UFC so far in his career. You know,
the Contender Series churned out a lot of fighters, man. Absolutely. I was pretty skeptical when they first were doing it, honestly. I didn't even really watch it. I wasn't hating on it. I was just,
well, the guys are coming in and winning. That's the biggest thing.
They're coming in and doing good. We're getting a lot of people.
It's not and honestly, there's also been some guys that they've let walk away that have gone in and done things in other organizations. Like, you got Brandon Longmane, who was on there, who's now signed to PFL.
I'd like to see how he does.
You know what I'm saying? And of course you have freaking Johnny Walker, like, you know, Greg Hardy.
Dude, Johnny Walker, did you see him just come out and straight blame his coach for that loss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty rough. That was pretty tough, who wants to train him now, though, right?
No, who?
Freaking Firas Zahabi.
Oh, that'd be interesting. That'd be a smart move if you go up there and train with someone like that. Like, you couldn't really lose in that situation.
Absolutely not.
I'm sure he'll probably do that then. Yeah. Otherwise, he's...
So, yeah, I feel like just like the crop of talent they've brought in from the Contender Series has really helped also with the actual talent being funneled into the UFC. Because before it was kind of... We didn't really know... It gives people a vested interest in fighters when they don't necessarily know them. You know what I'm saying? Like, the guys like that come onto the scene and become these big stars usually become stars as we get to know them as they fight. You know what I'm saying? That's why when you're a guy like McGregor, when he got tore his ACL, like, after his second fight in the UFC, it was a huge blow to his actual, like, brand until he kept himself in the media talking about he was going to fill in for fights. Everyone knew he wasn't medically cleared to fight, but he was just putting his name out there constantly. That's what you kind of have to do nowadays if you're not being brought in by the Contender Series. I guess they said they're going to bring back the Ultimate Fighter, but I don't know when that's going to happen. But
the Contender Series kind of takes some shine off the Ultimate Fighter because the Ultimate Fighter is ultimately about the fights, but there's so much buildup. If you're not into that type of thing...
Here's the thing. When it comes to Ultimate Fighter, what the UFC did that was smart was, although they made it seem like it's 12 guys in one house fighting for one UFC contract. No, in reality, it's 12 guys fighting in one house. The UFC is going to evaluate every single one of them, exactly. Sign every single one of them, whether it be to a three-fight deal or a long-term deal is going to depend on how far you get in there. But really, when you think about it, if you go down season by season by season by season with the Ultimate Fighter, every single guy pretty much was signed all the way through.
And they've shifted the show. It used to be back in the early, it was about the antics in the house, which the later seasons here has a small little bit of that, but it's more about the history of the fighters.
It takes a personality to be put in, and then what does the show become? You know,
well, that's why I like the show now, though, because it shows a lot about the fighters themselves and like where they come from, their family, why they're fighting.
What's it called, the Contender Series?
No, the Tough.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they spend a lot of time with that.
They do that in the Contender Series also, though.
Like, I get a vested interest.
Yeah, I feel like they do that in the Contender Series a little bit now, though, too. Like, a lot of their main event fights are like the bigger, like, main card fights of the Contender Series. They go and they do like a little bit of the like family history or whatever. Like, that guy Anthony Hernandez that was fighting on there, unfortunately, like, his dad passed away, and like they went into like his old childhood and like all kinds of shit like that. So I don't know. I really just think it depends on, like we were talking about, getting a vested interest in these guys coming into the UFC.
Well, Sadiq Youssef has definitely been a good addition from that show, without a doubt. And we're both in agreement thinking he's likely to beat Andre Feely here in this last kind of big fight that's on this card that we're going to talk about.
Yep.
You know, I want to talk a little bit briefly about the card after this, and then we'll circle it back around to the Conor McGregor and Cowboy fight and kind of talk about our final thoughts here before we wrap up the show, Paul. But after this, we do have a fairly good heavyweight on January 25th showdown with Curtis Blaydes and Dos Santos. Junior Dos Santos coming back from that leg infection that he is now saying nearly killed him.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That was some serious. Staff is crazy, man.
That shit is disgusting, too.
It is. It's horrible.
The fucking photos he shared were nuts.
That's absolutely. You can look them up online. Google Junior Dos Santos' leg if you've got a strong stomach. Yeah, that's pretty fucking foul, man.
Yeah, don't do that. Fuck that. It was bad, man.
That's scary. I can't imagine having to deal with that. That's some frightening stuff.
Well, that's what. Like, a lot of these guys, it's crazy when they come back.
For that bowl?
Yeah, it's crazy when they come back and fight right away. Like you know what fight I was watching the other day on just randomly on YouTube?
What's that?
Because they had the Brock Lesnar Alistair Overeem fight on there. And I was just sitting there thinking, like, Brock Lesnar, why the fuck did you not take more time off after you had diverticulitis? Like, because if you watch that fight, Alistair just starts it out, whack, right away. Fucking body kick. Right to the intestines, and you just see Brock's face go from, oh, shit.
Yeah, he turned ashen after that, and then the fight was pretty much done.
Like, so it's like, it really just begs the question is, like, how healthy is Dos Santos's leg? You know what I'm saying? Because he could still have dead tissue in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And what happens if Blade comes out and just delivers some monster kicks to that leg in the early?
But...
then that's going to take Dos Santos' power away.
I don't think Blaydes is going to want to stand with him, though, to be honest.
No, I mean, he's got a great wrestling game.
Yeah.
But Junior's takedown defense is no joke, though. He's solid. I mean...
solid. Like, I don't know. I've heard some people question his jiu-jitsu black belt.
I've heard these rumors as well. Yeah, I've heard that.
Like...
I don't know how legit that is. I don't know
either, so I'm not going to make my decision based on that. I'm just going to go with this, is Dos Santos is kind of on the backside of his career, whereas Blaydes, although he's run into some shitty situations against Ngannou twice, he's more or less been pretty dominant when it comes to these bigger fights. Like, if you really look at it, he's got the two Ngannou losses. Other than that, though, he's got the big Alistair Overeem win. He's got some pretty good, like co-main event wins, you know what I'm saying, where he could possibly get right back in the title picture.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, you're I'm picking taking Blaydes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Blaydes in that fight, too. We're not disagreeing on any of these things. I like Blaydes. The other kind of major this made a really interesting fight for me on this upcoming card. I wanted to touch on was we've got Rafael dos Anjos coming back against Michael Chiesa at 170.
I like this fight a lot.
This is a fight that could have happened at 55. I'm happier it's happened at 170. I think that's better for both guys.
Yeah. I like Chiesa.
On paper, if I had to say who you think should win this fight, I would say Chiesa. But I'm going to pick this purely with my heart. I really think and really just want, I just want Rafael dos Anjos to win. I don't like Michael Chiesa. Don't get me wrong.
I don't really like Michael Chiesa at all. I don't like him at all. But in his last fight against Diego Sanchez, he just showed like he's physically caught up to his like abilities.
No, I agree. I think he should win this fight.
Martial artist that I feel like
I'm still picking dos Anjos. I think dos Anjos is going to come out with something to prove with all these losses he's been taking in these big fights and be like, "No, I'm still legit, motherfuckers." And he's going to come out. Yeah,
dos Anjos does have some questions to answer here.
He's going to come out and fucking beat him down.
Yeah.
Beat him down early. That's what I'm hoping.
That's what I'm hoping.
I realize that's unlikely to happen, but that's my pick. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
I'm going to hit this pipe in here. And
so
let's circle back around here to our final thoughts. So this is the big show week, you know. This is it. It's the return of Conor McGregor. We'll be at the
weigh-ins on Friday. If you guys are out there, come say what's up.
Absolutely. And, you know, I didn't think this day would come. I really didn't think Conor was going to come back. He's got me pretty much on board with that he's going to win. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be pretty disappointed if he comes out and gets smoked.
What if this is just the end, the start of the second McGregor era, and he just comes back and is...
That's what I hope. I ain't going to lie. I hope he comes out. I hope he wins this. I hope he goes and wins the BMF title, and then I hope he fights Nate Diaz for it. That's what I want to see. Wouldn't that be dope? No, fuck Khabib fight. Just let Khabib ride off into the sunset.
Just think about how much money you can make fighting Khabib in Moscow.
And then take that second loss.
It's irrelevant.
In Moscow.
It's irrelevant.
Just get ridden like a horse again.
That's a $100 million fight
submitted.
You can't deny it's a $100 million fight. It's a $100 million paycheck for him.
But what about Kenny? What about the future brand damage?
If he was really going to make $80 million for this fight like he says he's going to, it's a $100 million fight when he fights Khabib.
What about the brand damage with the loss, though?
It's not really, because if Khabib is continuously undefeated, it will not be seen as like, oh, Conor sucks. Everybody's gotten defeated by Khabib at that point, because if they fight, it's going to be after he beats Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson's everybody's saving grace, honestly. We cannot sit here and not...
God, I hope Tony wins.
Tony
please.
Is everyone's saving grace if we're talking about wanting Khabib to lose.
Please, Tony.
Because Tony's the only one who has this equal
ground. It'll be a beautiful day. I'll be dancing in my fucking living room when Tony Ferguson wins. He deserves it, damn. Let alone just the fact that I'm not a Nurmagomedov fan.
And dude,
I respect his game, though. I think he beats Conor again.
How great would a Justin Gaethje Tony Ferguson 5-round title fight be?
That'd be pretty sick.
There's situations where if Khabib loses to Ferguson, it fucks his whole career up, because then Conor doesn't really value him because he's not the champion.
Right.
And then we got Conor would possibly just do what you were talking about, maybe fight George, possibly beats George, rematches Nate. And then walks off at age 34, probably.
Because those will be monsters. He goes on a win streak like that, he'll be monstrous. Yeah. Monstrous again, especially with his kind of improved attitude. I think he's learned some lessons with his behavior.
You think he'll really fight till he's 35?
I doubt it.
It's 4 more years. He said he's going to fight 3 times this year. I don't think that's happening. I think he's fighting once, maybe twice.
I don't see the 3 fights. I would be shocked. I see a win here in the BMF fight. Frankly, I don't really see the BMF fight. I don't know. Depends a lot on how he looks against Cowboy. Everything rides on this. The McGregor brand, it's not like failure or success level. It's not like, oh, he's done. His brand is over. Like, no. He's a superstar. He survived losses before. He'll continue, but like, he's done as far as like the McGregor era.
Yeah,
like that point in MMA when he was king of the fucking world, that's done.
Yeah, I feel you. That makes more sense. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the beginning of era number two.
I think it is too. I really hope so, man. I'm excited.
It's the rebrand.
That'd be dope. Everybody loves a comeback story.
Everybody loves a fucking rebrand.
They do. And everybody loves a comeback story.
Oh yeah.
And if he pulls it, that'd be sick, man.
And I'm one of those people.
Me too. Me too, my friend. We'll know next episode. Yep. Next week we'll be talking hopefully about the rebirth of the Conor McGregor era.
Part two. Well, I think that wraps up the show today.
I think it does. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You can catch our show Thursday nights, 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Here on the West Coast, 9 p.m. on the East Coast, WBUZ 95 on the Orange Radio app or radio.net.
YouTube, Google Play.
Wherever you get your podcast from. That's right.
Head over there, hit the gear button, buy yourself some shit, support the podcast. Don't be a dick.
Peace, everybody.